Hi, folks. This is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 45. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Chime in with comments and such on the show notes. And follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts where you will get emails notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. Make a note, please, that if you email me directly and ask me a question, you're automatically opting in for the email alerts. So, there you go. Today, I'm going to talk about a bunch of different things. I kind of had a plan for some other things I really wanted to talk about, but, you know, a bunch of the stuff came up, and I thought, hey, you know, I'll just talk about these things. So, first and foremost, I wanted to talk about, any of you in Joplin, Missouri, who are dealing with the aftermath of the tornado and have family and friends. I'm sure that if you're actually in Joplin, you're probably not going to download this podcast for quite a while. But if you have friends and family there, my thoughts and prayers go out to you all. When I woke up this morning and saw the news, and it's just devastating. I'd like to complain about things around here or whatever, you know, that go on at my house but after seeing that, there's no way I can complain. Anyway. Again, my thoughts and prayers going out to Joplin, Missouri, and everybody that lives there. And just, I hope that you all send your thoughts and prayers to them too. Do what you can to help out. Anyway, on to the rest of the show. We're going to talk about guitars and amps and stuff. So, it appears that the theme of my two favorite guitar magazines here the last couple months has been lists. You know, when you tune into, say, Fox Sports Net or ESPN, and they have their list shows, like greatest running backs of all time, or most intimidating pitchers of all time, best linebackers of all time, all those all-time lists, those top 10 lists and everything, I'm a sucker for them. I don't know if you like them, but I'm a complete sucker for them. Even though, you know, you watch that, you're like, how can you possibly compare someone like Dan Marino to Johnny Unitas or, you know, go on down the list? Because it's so many different eras. But it always sparks that debate and that internal debate. And then I find myself yelling at the TV going, no, he can't, no, you know, and that sort of thing. I think that must be why. I just love him so much. Anyway, if you love lists like that and love to debate and kind of, you know, part of those things about those lists is not only the debate, but the things that I might learn about these other people and athletes and stuff. I know I'm talking sports. Bear with me. Vintage Guitar has the top 25 guitar songs of the 80s. This issue has Jeff Beck on the cover. It is the July 2011 issue. That's pretty cool. It's a good issue. But it's top 25 guitar songs of the 80s, which narrows things down quite a little bit. But then again, you can still argue, you know. But it's really cool as I'm sitting there reading it and I'm learning things, a little more background about some of these songs that I grew up listening to or hearing on the radio that I didn't know about before. And it's really kind of cool. Then, you know, and Vintage Guitar is probably my favorite guitar magazine nowadays. But I tell you, Guitar Player magazine has the 40 most influential rock solos ever. You know, how do you say that? But they actually narrow it down to rock solos, okay? they do expand upon that with a little, with some blues and some jazz. So, and it has to be electric guitar. So that helps narrow things down too. But I'm sure they're close to fist fights whenever the editors were trying to come up with what solos and everything would be on here. And they excluded some people for the mere fact of, you know, they have a collection of great songs, some like George Harrison, some really nice solos and stuff, but not this one quintessential guitar solo. Something else that they've done with this that I really, really love is that they... Oh, by the way, this is the June 2011 issue of Guitar Player. And I'm not sure who is on the cover of this. It's a silhouette of a cat playing what looks like to be a Les Paul or a Gibson of some sort. He's wearing a cool cowboy hat, like a stovepipe type cowboy hat. It looks really super cool. I'm not sure if it's a guy from Lynyrd Skynyrd or I'm not sure. I know it's not Slash. The right place. It used to be 2 pages into the magazine, it would tell you. Have no idea. Anyway, that's beside the point. I like the way they do this list. I'm not going to tell you everybody and everything that's on here because, you know, the guitar player people would probably be fairly upset with me as opposed to maybe happy with me for mentioning their magazine and my podcast. But what I think is really cool here, and I will read one because I think this guy has been overlooked in many circles over the years, and he had a profound impact on my early guitar playing, although he was way before my time. It's Chuck Berry's Johnny B. Goode from 1958, long before I was born. Okay? So, I'm just going to read this straight out of the magazine. While some people might not consider this song's intro a solo, it might be the most important rock guitar part ever recorded. The double stops essentially usher in the post-Elvis era, and the tone and balls of this iconic part would echo in the playing of George Harrison, Keith Richards, Eddie Van Halen, and Angus Young, to name just a 0.1% of the players who have copped these licks. Listen to it again, you'll see. And what's really cool about this is it shows like 3 levels of influence. So in the middle, we have Chuck Berry. Now, who influenced him, they're showing is T-Bone Walker. And then beyond Chuck, they're showing Keith Richards. Of course, they spell it K-E-E-F, which I think is great. But, I mean, they mentioned George Harrison, Keith Richards, Eddie Van Halen, Angus Young, just to name a few. But the thing is, his blues-style licks from that era are, I think, I know, you know, Elvis is the king of rock and roll, but I think what Chuck Berry did with the electric guitar and rock and blues, I know that people are going to hate me for saying this, but I think it really hammered real rock into our culture. Real rock and blues. Just listen to it. You got to listen to it. And if you can play it, learn it, do it, you got to learn it and play it. Now, I always played in B-flat. Maybe my guitar was out of tune when I learned it, but I played in, like, B-flat minor blues. It may be A. It may be B. I don't know. But when I learned it, I just said, I'm learning it. I didn't care about tune, and I got close to wherever my guitar was. And back then, you know, it didn't necessarily matter. But I've always thought it was B-flat. So I could be wrong. It doesn't matter. You learn it. I strongly recommend you learning the tune. It's great. And one of these days I'm going to do a full episode on Chuck Berry because I have such a high opinion of his guitar playing and his influence from the late 50s on, that he was just a man. And I can't say, once you listen to that and listen to the rest of his stuff and then start listening to stuff that came out in the 60s and the 70s and now, and even listen to, you know, stuff done by Brian Setzer, he may not mention Chuck Berry as an influence. You know, Eddie Cochran would be more of an influence that everybody would put in line for Brian Setzer. But you'll definitely hear some Chuck Berry there. So, anyway, I'm really digging this list. And the nice thing is, they have 40. Now, why didn't they go to 50? They could have gone 50. But, anyway, it's really cool. And that's that for lists. So, and there have been a lot of lists. So, if you're into lists and you want to learn more about a little bit of background and kind of some of these songs that they're mentioning on here, when they mention Eddie Cochran sitting in the balcony. And I've heard some Eddie Cochran before, but I haven't heard this song. And I'm like, dude, I've got to Google this or put it on YouTube and find it. And I'm sure somebody has an audio of it on YouTube with a picture of Eddie Cochran or his record cover or something like that. So that's kind of cool. So if you haven't heard a song before, you know, then it directs you there and shows you some of the back, you know, the just a snippet of the backstory, a little bit of a teaser for you, and then influences. So I think it's really cool. Now then, I'm going to answer a few questions here. One came in on Facebook. Ben asks, which speakers do I have in my JCM-800, and do I like them? Well, I have 275-watt Celestians. They're the original speakers as far as I know, because I know that they look very different than the ones that they're put that Marshall's been putting in there since maybe in the 90s or something. And they sound great and all. And I can get old school Metallica and AC/DC tones as well as some really nice country tones from it, even using my SG. Now, I'll talk about that a little bit more later. But I have been considering getting greenbacks in it instead, primarily because there's this sort of mythological kind of aura about the greenbacks. There always have been. I've read where a lot of guitar players that I've looked up to over the years have those greenbacks in their cabinets. Well, my 1956 Gibson GA40, the original speaker blew in it before I ever got it or whatever. I don't know what happened to the speaker, but there's a greenback in there. The replacement speaker is a Celestian greenback, and the thing sounds amazing. There are tones that just overtones and just depth to the overdrive that it gets is just, you know, I'm sure part of it is the amp, part of it is probably the speaker. It's just a combination of all of it, the vintage vibe and everything. So I've been thinking about replacing those with the greenbacks. If I don't like them, you know, I could probably sell them and still and get decent money out of them, or just hold on to them or whatever, or make another cabinet, you know, for another, like, a piggyback type amp that I would like to get, like a Karman Ghia or something that is really cool sounding and not terribly expensive. But that's where I am about those speakers in my 800. Then I asked on the Facebook page, have you ever dimed your amp? And Ben, of course, chimes in, it goes to 11. And I said, sweet, is your real name Nigel? As in, you know, if I have to explain that one to you, I'm sorry. But anyway, relating these two questions kind of together, last week I was able to take my Marshall and truly dime it. Never done it before. I've had it pretty loud before, but I turned all the knobs, all of them, at 100 watts, all the way up to 10. And I used that 74SG. And wow, I shook the foundation of that store. Because I couldn't do it here at home. Wife would never stand for that. And the kids probably wouldn't either. Neighbors probably wouldn't either. Yeah, they'd probably be in trouble. I'm sure that I'd get a letter from the Homeowners Association. Something along those lines. They wouldn't be happy. But my buddy at the guitar store, Mike Morris at Brownsburg Guitar, would, yeah, he was all smile, and he goes, "Yeah, I'll be waiting outside." But you know, it sounded pretty cool, but I liked it better whenever I pulled the mid back to about 5 and left everything else still there. It sounded better that way. But quite honestly, I take this approach with most amps anymore. Is you can turn them up really loud, and you know, yeah, you say, I've heard people say, yeah, you take your Marshalls and just turn everything on 10. Well, it didn't sound great on 10, okay? It sounded almost best either at 50 or 100 watts. I put a half switch in the back of it. Well, I had somebody put a half switch in the back of it. It breaks it down from 100 watts down to 50 watts. Both of them sounded really good, just different. Just barely. Just a nuance. But the amp honestly sounded best at about 5 on the master volume, and then tweaking my my gain in different areas, and keeping the bass on 10, pulling the presence back a bit, and having the treble at about maybe 6 or 7, maybe about 130 on the clock, I guess you'd say. It was really loud, and I actually decided to turn it down and put it on standby a little bit because I smelled something getting hot. Nothing was wrong with it because we kept on jamming the rest of the evening, but it was pretty interesting. So anyway, they don't have to be dimed to sound great. I did have a 1965 Bassman head, and it sounded really good dimed, turning everything up to 10. I thought it sounded pretty good. I may pull back on the treble a little bit or something like that, but that thing, that's one amp that really did sound pretty good that loud. Now, my GA40, you turn it all the way up, oh, it sounds great. But its real sweet spot is at about 230 on the clock, or I don't know, I can't read the numbers because it's all the top of it's all rusted. You can barely read anything on it on the top of it. But it's I'd say, I don't know, somewhere around the number 7 where it would be if it has a number on it. But I keep the tone there too, and you know, with it like that, if I pick lightly, I get it clean. I get a nice clean tone, or roll back the volume just a notch or two on my guitar, and it cleans up pretty nice too, and pick lightly. Turn the volume all the way up and pick a little harder, it dirties up, and you hammer the guitar, it gets pretty good overdrive, and then you put it like a clean boost in front of it, or even just a little bit of an overdrive in front of it, it really starts breaking up really nice and pretty, and you get all these nice overtones, and just, it's really cool. So, you know, I had to dime it once. I had to dime my Marshall once because it's like the one amp that I've owned here recently that I haven't done that to. It's something that was funny about that is I could get like an old school Ride the Lightning, an earlier type of Metallica tone out of it, or a nice Back in Black, an earlier AC/DC tone. I guess you could certainly get later tones out of it. I mean, I guess it's AC/DC, and I have plenty of gain in that amp to do it. But what was really super cool was if I turn the treble up, turn the gain back, turn the power, the master volume up, and put the middle switch, put my toggle switch so that both humbuckers were on my SG, I was getting some nice twangy country tones, some nice chicken picking stuff, and I'm going, well, it's not a Telecaster, it's not a Fender, it's not a Dr. Z, you know, I'm not using your typical country gear, you know. It's like, you got to play country, you got to have Telecaster or ASAT or something like that, and a Fender or a Dr. Z or, or something along those lines. When you think of Gibson or Marshall, you don't think of country picking, do you? But I was totally getting it, and I loved it. I thought that was so cool. I'm not sure I could get that with my Les Paul and my Marshall. Certainly was getting it with that SG. Such a nice guitar. Maybe it shouldn't be for sale. Oh, well. Yes, my wife said, you want trees. Honestly, that's pretty much it. If I start this other topic, I'll be talking for another hour. So I'm going to save that for next time. I'm working on some cool interviews with two of my favorite pedal makers. And they're not like the big name ones you probably think of right off the top of your head. But I think they'd make great stuff. And I can't wait to get these interviews going. Hey, I'm on vacation next week, so maybe I'll actually get these videos done right for the pick reviews. Because remember I said that I did the video, long video, and I started watching it, and I was like, that's just terrible. And I haven't gotten back around to doing the videos the way I really want to do it and do them right for you and all that. Once again, the video topic, I do want to know, once again, if you watch any of the videos on YouTube, you'll notice that I'm not showing my face. I have the camera cropping my head off, so that all you see is basically my hands and my guitar and whatever product I'm reviewing or talking about in front of you. So I just want to know what you think. Should I show my face or not? Get your opinion. Until then, there will be no face. That pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Once again, a reminder, if you email me a question there, you are automatically added to the email alert list. And comment on the show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. If you liked what you heard today and you subscribed using iTunes or Zune, please let them know by writing a review and tell them how much you like it, how awesome the Guitar Podcast is, and all that good stuff. Well, hopefully you say that. If not, that's fine too. People need to know. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.